tourism industry, I consider myself part of you now, of course, need to be leading the way, not just because you have a crucial mouthpiece here, but also it's a matter of survival for the industry. And I think that's a message very well taken, Derek, so thank you. So I'd like now to introduce to the stage Susanna Becken, who is Professor of Sustainable Tourism at Griffith University, Helen Karen from TUI Group Purchasing, the director there, and Inge Hugeberis, who is Global Senior Vice President, Responsible Business Safety and Security at Radisson Hotel Group. Thank you very much indeed. Please welcome. Do you want to sit? It doesn't matter where you sit, really, does it? I think some of the messages there that we were hearing, as I've said to you, were very powerful indeed. What I want to ask all of you first is, where is the imperative, in your view, coming from for responsible travel? Would you say it is because there is a matter of survival, because the consumer demands it, because the government is demanding it, or because you feel that you need to attach a morality, I suppose, to the brand? Where do you think it's coming from?
Yeah, great question. I think we've moved beyond the stage of just morality, because we have an absolutely pressing situation. I mean, plastic was mentioned, climate change.
Yes.
We really don't have much time left. And many of you would have seen the recent report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. So the time is ticking. So I think it's an urgency. And I actually think, especially in the last probably year or so, because of multiple crises, and Cape Town was mentioned, over tourism in some ways as well has shown that we have limits to capacity. So people have become much more aware. I think there's now more pressure from the public as well to say we got to address this.
So, Susanna, it's really coming from all sides. Helen, TUI, what is the thinking there?
Well, over the last 18 months to 2 years, we've seen a significant shift in consumer sentiment.
Can you hear us all, by the way? Is anybody at the back having troubles? I've got a thumb up. Okay. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. So we're seeing a significant shift in consumer sentiment, and it's interesting that you touched on earlier, in particular from younger people, millennials, and also from the female audience. They're telling us that they expect tour operators to take this matter seriously. 53% of customers in a recent survey told us that they had a much better image of a tour operator if they had a sustainability strategy. And also we saw that 57% of customers are more likely to select a tour operator to travel with if they took care of the environment. So for us, this is what our customers are telling us that they want. That's why it's really important.
Okay, and you're taking some very interesting initiatives, I know, so we'll come back to that. Inge, what about you? At Radisson, where do you think the pressure is coming from? Because I know from your point of view, some of the initiatives you take are actually quite complicated to explain to consumers, right? So in a way, it's kind of behind the scenes. You don't always get credit for what you're doing with the consumer.
Well,
or not immediate credit, anyway.
Yeah, I think it's coming from both ways, as we have heard. I think it's an absolute necessity to do something about climate change and water scarcity and issues like plastic. So we feel it's an absolute necessity. We want to align as a company with the targets of COP21 on climate change. But it's also something we are seeing from our consumers, as was said before. And I'm very glad to see that consumer movement, because today we see that consumers can create that pressure and they can vote with their wallets. And that is what they are doing. It's also something where we as a company want to do the right thing. With origins in the Nordics, Radisson Hotel Group has had an environmental policy for over 25 years. So we've been doing the right thing, or trying to do the right thing, for a very long time, even when we do not get recognition and even when it is something that happens behind the scenes on a more technical level. So I'm very glad to see both things coming together, the pressure, the necessity, and the pressure from consumers.
Helen, if I may come back to you, I just want to go through very specifically a few of the initiatives to give an idea to the audience of how the group is thinking on this.
Okay, so the aim at TUI really is to drive change at scale. We take 20 million customers on holiday every year, so we need to do this at scale.
20 million?
20 million. So in this year, over 8 million of our customers will have stayed in one of our hotels that has a sustainability accreditation by the Global Sustainability Tourism Council. So, you know, we are making a difference. And those customers are staying in hotels where it's proven they are reducing their carbon efficiency, they are better managing their waste.
Increasing their carbon efficiency.
decreasing their carbon efficiency, yeah, decreasing their waste, and they are decreasing the amount of water that they're using. So
right,
that
just
is
a few initiatives to explain how you go about doing that.
So we're asking them to look at initiatives of how they recycle. So we talked about earlier about customers not recycling on holiday. That's not our experience, because in our hotels with this accreditation, they are all expecting our holiday makers to recycle. If it's single-use plastics, if it's they're expecting them to recycle all kinds of waste. But we're also taking initiatives to eliminate single-use plastics as well. So we're drawing straws in our hotels. We've recently announced that on our cruise ships. We're looking to how between now and 2020 we can eliminate as much single-use plastic as possible. So there's a lot going on in our hotels, but then also in our airline. We aim to operate the most efficient carbon efficient airlines. We are recognised as the most carbon efficient airlines in Europe, and that is our aim to continue to do that. So, you know, it's touching all parts of our business, and it's ingrained into TUI's DNA. It is now about this is just the way we do business.
Okay, so just to be clear, I suppose listening to this, one might suspect that really it's tinkering at the edges, but you're able to measure the impact of this, are you?
Yeah, we certainly are. And, you know, we communicate the impact that we're having in our annual report every year. We also have objectives for our people to reduce their carbon impact as well. So as an example, recently in our shops, we have 600 shops within the UK, we were incentivizing our teams to reduce their impact that they were having on the environment. So we need to do this in a really, really fun way with a red, amber, green system so the shop managers can understand exactly you know, how they can reduce the impact they're having on the environment. So from reducing the amount of electricity that they're using, reducing like their carbon footprint, but also then being advocates of the TUI Care Foundation, which is one of the ways that we can then pay back in the destinations that our customers are travelling to.
Susanna, let's come to you. The elephant in the room a bit is that many people who go on holiday fly, and carbon emissions are part of that.
Yeah.
Is the tourism industry grasping this as firmly as they might?
Yeah, I mean, it is very topical. In the last 2 days, the reason why I couldn't be here was I went to an aviation carbon conference, and so that is where over 60 airlines were, 200 people, really discussing for 2 days the absolute ins and outs of measuring carbon, reporting it, because as many of you probably know, from the 1st of January in 2019, this new system starts, CORSIA, Carbon Offsetting Reduction Scheme for International Aviation. And so airlines will have to report their emissions, and that is not an easy task. And so they are aware. The idea is ultimately to then offset growth beyond 2020. Now, offsetting, there's a whole lot of issues. But one, since you talk about the customer, one thing that came up at the discussions with the airlines, many still see it as a compliance thing. We have to do this, we have to measure the carbon, we have to report it, and we have to buy that offset. It's not embedded really yet, the thinking, okay, this is actually truly important that we're part of it. And customers, of course, and that was one point I was making, there are customers who come to a hotel that does a lot of initiative in terms of responsible tourism. They fly there, they feel some disconnect.
Yeah.
So they expect the airline to do their bit and mean it and also communicate it. And I think that's the next big thing for the airlines, not just to do the compliance, but actually go beyond and engage their customers.
Okay, I think I sense this is a topic we should come back to. Inga, if I could come to you and ask about these specific initiatives. You've got some quite interesting ones in terms of power generation.
Yeah, that is correct. So I think in terms of responsibility as a company, at Radisson Hotel Group, we have 1,400 hotels around the world.
Yeah.
So the important thing is to reduce that footprint on the carbon side, on the water side, on the waste side. And for instance, on carbon and on water, we have been able to reduce our footprint by over 20% on carbon and by over 30% on water. And the way to do that is to invest and to try out innovations, because the innovations are out there, especially you are referring to the renewable power generation.
Yes.
And actually in South Africa, in Cape Town, we are trying one of those innovations on hybrid solar panels. So those are solar panels that generate electricity and heat at the same time, and they are 30% more efficient than the traditional solar powers. So our hotel park in foreshore in Cape Town is leading the way with that. And what people do not realize is that such an investment on renewable energy does not only reduce the footprint, the carbon footprint of the hotel significantly, and I see the minister nodding, I'm going to the water footprint as well, because to generate electricity and power in Cape Town, water is needed. For every kilowatt hour, 1.4 liter of water is needed. So by installing renewable energy in our hotel, we are also helping to preserve water so it can be used for other uses.
We talk about responsible travel a lot of the time in terms of water, electricity, and, of course, plastics. But it's getting people's perception of how they impact the environment around them. And I mean it in its broadest terms, communities, for example. That is extending too. Is it difficult to stay on top of all of the various things that come up in the press and so on and to respond to them?
Well, I think, TUI's for a long time led the way in having a real focus internally and having a team focused on sustainability. And Jane Ashton has been recognised both within the travel industry or more globally for the work that she's led there. So it's really important that we have that focus internally and that we seek to address every single area of the customer journey. So, yes, there's a lot to keep up on and there's always more to do, but with the right focus, I believe that we can deliver there.
What are the next targets? I mean, we've talked about, we will talk about in the context of the awards, wildlife tourism, sometimes this where people visit orphanages, but you know it's unclear as to whether there's an incentive to provide children for orphanages and so on. It's a very complex world we live in, isn't it?
It is a very complex world that we live in, and we work closely with all agencies and the authorities to make sure that the experiences that we are offering to our customers, and they are increasingly wanting more authentic experiences, meet the needs of the communities that we operate in. And one of the ways that we are doing that is through the TUI Care Foundation. So we're working in destination with the local authorities, with NGOs to make sure that where we're taking our customers, that we are looking after the local people, and that we're also investing in the local community as well. So we do that through the TUI Care Foundation, and there's lots of great initiatives that we can talk about. So in Crete recently, we've had an initiative where we're working with local farmers and producers of wine. It's wine that we're using now in our hotels, and the same we are working to produce olive oil. So it's a great way that actually we can invest in the destinations that we are taking customers to, but we can also provide sustainable employment. So I think that's really where we can make a difference.
Inga, I saw you nodding there as Helen was talking about people wanting the authentic experience. Is there a conflict there, do you think?
I don't really see a conflict. I think we all, as tourism and travel operators and large hotel companies like ourselves, we have an opportunity to engage with the guests. If you're welcoming over 200,000 guests every day worldwide like we do, you have that opportunity of a touch point to involve them. And we do that with a number of classics. Like, for instance, we have linked our towel reuse to investing in safe drinking water projects. So every time a guest in our hotel reuses their towel, we actually donate to Just a Drop, the charity that is also associated with WTM. And that is making a lot of impact, but it's also helping to tell the story to the guest and engage them. Another thing we're doing at this time, and which is very successful, is we've started a cause marketing campaign in our Asia-Pac hotels called Make a Difference, where for every room night that gets booked in our Asia-Pac hotels, we donate $1 to our global charity partner, SOS Children's Villages. Now, that is a significant flow of donations, but it also helps to make travelers aware of the causes of protecting children and youth and also providing employment to the youth so that they get a better future.
I think this is a very interesting point that's being made here, that communicating and linking the story, had a very good expression there, and I can't quite remember what it was, but telling the story to the guests and linking it to another outcome, the towels and the Just a Drop. What I know that you specialize in communications too, so tell us the importance of that, if you would.
I think it comes down to values and shared values, and for the customer to understand that maybe the business has values more than just generating profit, whether it's community, environment, that creates better products and better experiences. And if there's ways to share that with the customer and give the customer the opportunity to be part of it, that results in a better business. And there's actually quite a lot of research that these types of businesses have better profitability, lower staff turnover, higher customer satisfaction because they are superior. And what often I think we need to do still better is think about the customer as a willing helping hand rather than someone we need to save from the back of the house initiative that we're doing because the customer wants it. They want to be part of it.
But also I'm very interested in this very close link between doing something and communicating it to the customer. Because if you're communicating something too complicated, presumably they either don't buy into it or they can't understand it. It's a complicated business.
It is a complicated business, but people are not stupid. And so there's one example I work with in Australia where the business uses a smart service system. So it's a combination of smart digital metering, informing the people about how much they used, encouraging them to use less in very clever ways, but also telling them, for example, any savings we make will go to a local charity for wildlife conservation. So all of a sudden you close the loop and the people really keen to contribute.
Interesting.
I think communication is really important, and I think one of the challenges for us as a business is to make sure that we communicate to our own people as well the benefits of what that we're doing. We have, like all organisations, there is a big team within TUI, and we have to invest significantly in communicating to our own people as well the benefit that we are.
How do you go about it? I hadn't even thought that might be a problem. Of course it is, yes.
It is. Well, there's a lot of training that takes place for our internal colleagues across all of the front line so that they understand the impact of our business on the environment and how they can then make a difference. So whether this is online training or whether it is in destination training, it's really important that we get the message down to our frontline staff because they then can do a great job in communicating to our customers the initiatives that we have underway and also how our consumers can make a difference as well.
You're both involved with very, very strong, well-known brands. Do you see yourself, I started by saying that the tourist industry can be a very useful mouthpiece, I think. Do you see yourselves in that role, Inga?
Well, I wouldn't overestimate our own importance, but I do think that we have a responsibility as a company, but also collectively. Mm. And to highlight, we are a very active member of a group of international hotel companies coming together and working on sustainability called the International Tourism Partnership. And collectively, we have set 2030 long-term goals for the industry on youth employment, human rights, carbon reduction and water stewardship. And we all collectively and individually work on that. And we also create tools on this platform of the ITP that we offer to the wider industry. So I think the larger companies who have bigger teams and who have resources to reach out not only to their own employees but to their network of hotels also have a responsibility to partner, as it says in the SDG 17, partnerships for the goals, to reach out to the other players in the industry and the destinations and do these projects collectively.
Do you find that you have to train your staff to understand the value of what you're doing too? Do you have to
Absolutely.
Communicate
and do? Absolutely, and it's fun doing that, actually.
Is it?
Because we have two trainings in the sustainability world. We have one that we call Living Responsible Business and then one that's called Leading for the leaders of the hotels and the area offices. And we make that a very engaging training with lots of exercises with a board game at the end and lots of videos. And we do feel that this is very useful because a lot of our staff are young people. They want to be, just like the young consumers, as Helen was saying, they want to be engaged, they want to be involved. And sometimes the best ideas just come from the field. Like on banning the straws, Refuse the Straw was an initiative that started in our company, not globally, but for us, it started with hotels in Africa, team members saying, we're going to do this, we're not going to serve straws. And from there, it spread from a couple of hotels in Africa, it spread to the whole of EMEA, now our hotels in China and across the company. So it comes from initiatives in the hotels.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Nobody has a monopoly on good ideas, do they? Often they will come from staff.
Well, they come from staff, they come from civil society, from the kids even at school. Yeah. I mean, we all have children, and we now our children have the best ideas. They have common sense.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I was going to say is that, and this is why events like this are so important in having big companies on the panel, having finalists and award winners, is that we need these ideas to multiply. Because and the reason I say that is because tourism is such a successful industry. It's growing faster than average.
Yeah.
And we need to multiply these good ideas and the companies that actually show that it can be done to make sure that everyone is doing it. Otherwise, we do not achieve what we need to achieve.
Is there enough sharing of good ideas, do you think?
Oh, I think there's a lot
within the industry.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Good communication. Excellent. Now, I'd like to take a couple of questions from the audience. We're overrunning, so we don't have too much time. Please don't give a speech. Do tell me where you're from and what your name is. Yes, please, I can see a hand here. So we get a mic there, and there's another hand, I think, somewhere else. We get a mic to two hands, and then we can start. Oh, there's one at the back. Excellent. So let's go right in the middle here. Yes, please, if you'd stand up. Yes, hello.
Hello, thank you very much. My name is Angela Kalish. I'm the chair for an organization called Equality in Tourism, which works with women to improve the position of women in the tourism and hospitality industry.
And you would no doubt have noticed that we're all women here.
You are, and that's fantastic. However, gender equality really hasn't been mentioned as yet.
No.
Nor have we mentioned the position of people and host communities, local communities in destinations, who are often struggling against some of the negative impacts of tourism.
Okay.
However, I don't want to be negative. I want...
What is your question?
My question is, we're just publishing a report on women in senior and executive positions in the tourism industry, okay, and on company boards. And I know that Inge, for example, has contributed to our research with an interview on that. Inge has done some incredible work on this, and I want to know that since the takeover by a Chinese company, which is happening a lot, what's actually happening, how much progress has been made in your strategy for gender equality?
And so it's a question to Inge in particular, but if you'd like anybody else, Inge.
Can I answer? Yeah.
Okay. Please do.
Yeah. So thank you for the question, and thank you for promoting the work of women and gender equality in tourism and travel. We need that, absolutely. I think we are doing, since the takeover that you refer to, our program of balanced leadership, as we call it, continues with program in the hotels, with specific targets, and with unique achievements, like we having the first female native Saudi GM in a hotel in Saudi Arabia. So the program continues. However, I must admit that at the board level, we did lose female representation. We continue, of course, to advocate for that. And as we are going to another ownership transition, I hope we can continue to put that on the agenda, because I do think it needs to come from the top. But I can assure you that in our business leadership, so let's say the top 100 of the company, I don't know the exact percentage, but the equality is strongly increased over the last year and a half.
Did you want to say
something? Yeah, can I just touch on what's happening with to support females in destination, because that's really important to the work that we do at the TUI Care Foundation, and there's a number of programs that we are investing in that absolutely supports the development of women. So whether that's training them to work in our
this
hotels,
is in the communities in which you operate, which, just to be clear. So that's the other part of your question.
So it's really important for us that we continue to do that, so that we give them the skills so that they then can have a career. We're doing some great work with training in hospitality, and also upskilling and giving people the opportunity to work in our hotels. So investing in women in destination is core to what the TUI Care Foundation is doing.
Right. Another question, please. Whoever's got the microphone, stand up and tell us your name and where you're from, please.
Thank you. My name is Luke Douglas. I come from a campaign called Stir Crazy. And I'm sorry about this, you know. The second question really for you is great work you've been doing about straws. We use these stirrers for 4 seconds, and they last for centuries. Will you also please lead the way on just making a public policy about not providing these for customers with your Raritan brand?
Good point. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't quite understand. You probably understand better than I do.
You were talking about the stirrers in the coffee?
Yeah, plastic stirrers.
I just want to say that for me, straws, we were talking about this. Straws, this is a paper one, by the way. It's a symbolic segue into having the conversation on single-use plastics, because from there we take it to stirrers having no stirrers at all or others, and we take it in Radisson to making our meeting and event single-use plastic-free. So it's a symbolic one that has helped engage the conversation on other topics. So I think it's very good you bring that up. It's not just the straws.
Exactly. To engage with the question of just why plastic?
Yeah, exactly.
These
or why use them in the first place?
Yeah. Exactly.
Because that's what we see with the straws. It has given us a business case because we don't offer the straws in the first place. We serve the drinks without the straws. That has reduced straw use by 83-84%. And the alternatives, although they are more expensive, the business case is still there because the straw use in general just is reduced.
Exactly. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. Next question, please. There's a question at the back. We could get a microphone there, please. And if you anybody else put their hand up, we can get the microphone to them. There's one here, please. Could you get a microphone to that person there, please? Thank you. Right, yes, please.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Sean, and I work with Shiva Foundation, and we work with hotels in the UK, mostly on modern slavery and human trafficking.
Yes.
And it's been briefly addressed today, and talking about human rights, and I'm familiar with ITP's principles on forced labor, and I'm looking forward to hearing them later today. But I just wondered if the people on the panel could potentially share a bit of information about what kind of initiatives they're taking to, A, address the risk of exploitation of any kind, whether that's in the hotels, so child sexual exploitation, but also with staff, and then further down the supply chain. And then second, how do we loop the customers into that conversation? Because historically, that's been a bit tricky.
Mm. Yes, okay. Exploitation. Where might you come across it and how might you deal with it?
Do you want to go first?
Either of you?
We've worked really closely with the TUI Care Foundation to promote these topics. And what we're trying to do in resort is make sure that we've got a really clear communication to our customers. We also work really closely with all of our suppliers and local agencies to make sure that we are compliant, that we are looking after all of our people and our employees that work in resort, and that we make sure that they have a sustainable future. So.
But is it very proactive what you do? Are you constantly looking out for it, or is it more reactive when it's brought to your notice?
No, absolutely. It's part of the way that we do business, and we want to make sure that, you know, all of our employees are well looked after, that we are compliant, they have a fair and safe working environment. It's part of the way we do business.
Yes, please.
Just quickly, I mean, it's something that's obviously also of real concern to the airlines, and I know that Finnair, for example, actively trains staff to recognize situations and deal with potential situations of human trafficking, so they want to be part of a positive solution.
Okay, yeah. I mean, hearing about sort of 15-year-olds checking in or things like who need to be interrupted and questioned. And airlines seem more switched on to this,
absolutely.
I get the impression,
absolutely.
Yes, please. The question here, wherever the microphone is, could you get up and start? And there's a question here as well, please. Great number of questions we've got. A couple more, I think. Don't we think? Yep. Yes, please. Could you stand up and shout?
Hi. My name's Alison Stancliffe, and 30 years ago I started a network called Tourism Concern. And its aim at the time was to say tourism is a huge industry 30 years ago, and no one is talking about the hosts. No one was actually thinking that there are impacts.
Hosts meaning what? Local communities are you talking
exactly.
about?
Exactly.
Yes.
Human, all the kind of impacts that have been sung loud and clear over the last day or two here. So I'm amazed in some ways that the industry now has taken on board so much of what we were saying. I despair that it's taken 30 years to get even this far, and that here we have an audience, a wonderful audience, but look what's happening outside here, how much bigger the challenge is. I'd just like a comment on that. How do you feel yourself at where the movement to put the people who matter, the people in the destinations that we take our clients to, that they matter? Is it, do you think, actually has it come home now?
Right, I think Helen's touched on that, haven't you, really? Ingo, do you have any more thoughts that you'd like to?
I don't think it's, I'm awfully sorry, but it was yes, let's do a little bit. I think I'm thinking about the wider the wider tourism industry. It's that's what I want to get your feeling about.
Okay, who has some thoughts that they want to share on that?
Well, I think it's an excellent point, but the thing is, when you are a tourism business, the important thing is to do the right thing yourself and to collaborate with others who do also the right thing in the industry. And I think platforms like the ITP, which I referred to earlier, when we talk about human rights, we talk about human rights and targets in the whole value chain. So we talk about providing chances through employment, specifically youth employment, equal employment locally. We talk about what do we do in our value chain, how do we reach out to suppliers, how do we reach out to the partners and suppliers in hotel building and development. So I think a lot of the tourism and travel is going, and specifically the international companies, when we come in to certain destinations where there are no international partners before, international companies before, we often create that employment, we create that uplift of skills. Of course, we need to pay attention to that, and we need to do that responsibly. But in terms of employment creation and chance creation, I think we are on the right track, let's say.
I think just from our perspective, you know, at TUI, we're really clear as the market leader, it's our responsibility to lead the way. And by leading the way, that's the way we believe we can have the biggest difference, and that's what we'll continue to do.
Right. Yes, next question, please. Yes, please.
Hello, my name's Nicola, and I work for a holiday rental company called SpainHoliday.com in Spain. So I know we're supposed to be talking about positive things today, and I'm hoping for a positive answer to maybe what's a little bit of a negative question. We recently started a campaign which looks to reduce food waste by asking guests in accommodation to put together the food and the half-used toiletries that they have, and we get the homeowners to take them and donate them to local food banks. So we think this is a great idea, and obviously at the moment the leading campaigns are about plastic and things like that. But my question really is that I've found in trying to spread the message that there's a certain amount of sustainability fatigue, and, well, that's been polite, sometimes there's kind of animosity towards campaigns. And obviously you're all quite big fish up there compared to our company, which is small fry.
Are they witnessing fatigue, is the question, yes?
Yes, it's kind of like people want to focus on, instead of saying congratulations on the things that you are doing, they always want to say, well, why aren't you doing this and why aren't you doing that? So I just want some advice on
so
how
are
you would
saying
you tackle this fatigue of people being negative to great ideas. Everything's a great idea.
Okay, great. Fatigue. Is there fatigue out there?
I actually don't see that. I think it's the opposite in some ways. It's the mainstreaming. And the reason I say that, for example, climate change, carbon risk, the mainstream companies now treat this as an absolutely essential business component. So you need to understand the risk. You need to. And food waste is another great one, because if you manage food better, there's so many win-wins, we almost don't even have to call it sustainable. Yeah. It's better, it brings in local communities, it's cheaper if you don't have to just cut the waste. So I think it's moving from, okay, sustainable here on the left to actually absolutely central good business. That's what I see.
I just wanted to add, and I want to applaud the initiatives that you are taking, but it's good to all go at it collectively. But I think creative communication is also a way to go about it. It's not really pointing the finger, but maybe having a little carrot with an incentive, like what we do, for instance, in the Middle East. You know, food waste is a big deal, because when families eat and they come together, it's all about the abundance of food. And one of our director of the kitchens in one of our big hotels with 13 restaurants, he said he introduced a scheme where people get a discount of, I don't know what the discount is, let's say it's 10% when the food they have on their plate is eaten. And you would see what an amazing impact this has had. It's like a little carrot that was, you know, tended to the guests and the customers. They can still enjoy the meal. It's in the way you communicate. And I have plenty of other examples. So I think we need to be smart about that as well.
About how you communicate. Yeah. Would you say that the way in which you communicate is probably changing too?
It is, and it needs to be fun. It needs to be engaging. It needs to be digital. And it needs to appeal to everyone. And a real clear, simple message. That's the key.
So there's an art in that too. There we must leave it, because we need to go on to the awards. I want to thank all our panelists very much indeed for talking us through some of those exciting initiatives and the very strong momentum within the industry. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Right, so it's now awards time. So it's a very exciting moment. I must declare an interest. I was this year on the panel. I was a witness to the decisions being made. This is a very exciting, varied, and complex world that we're trying to make sense of here. But some of the initiatives, I'm trying to stop using that word, but some of the creativity in addressing this problem is absolutely most extraordinary, beyond anything I could have dreamed of. So here we are. Welcome to the 2018 World Responsible Tourism Awards, organised by WTM London. So last year, as you may remember, we focused on the UN's Sustainable Development Goals in the International Year of Sustainable Development. And before I go any further, I've got to get Simon up with us, I believe. Is that right, or are you coming up later? Whenever you want to get involved. These awards have been presented at WTM London since 2004, now established as the most prestigious awards in responsible tourism, and we have daughter awards in Africa and India. So there are gold and silver awards. This year the judges have picked some ones to watch as well. Initiatives which are establishing themselves and beginning to have impact. So the judges won't be surprised at all if they reappear in the years to come. So as I've said, I was very privileged to be part of the judging panel this year. It is an extremely exciting moment, and Harold Goodwin tells us often it's the best day of the year. Until I took part, I couldn't really understand why that might be the case, but now I fully do. So it's long listing and short listing and so on. It's quite a complicated and very well thought through and thorough process. So let's get now to the finalists, gold and silver winners and ones to watch here. Not everyone can be a winner, as we know, but the finalists, to be a finalist at all is a massive achievement. And these are all leaders in responsible tourism. Now, the purpose of the awards is to inspire, educate, and challenge. The purpose in organising the awards hasn't really changed since they launched back in 2004. We want to encourage change within the industry, and I think we've done that, to single out for recognition those who are taking responsibility and evidence that they're having a positive impact. So we'll proceed with the presentations in the moment. Let me just explain first. There are five categories, and then an overall winner who is selected by the judges from amongst the gold winners. For each category, we're going to see all the list of finalists. You'll see that, and the leaders in responsible tourism for each category. So then I'll announce the gold winner, and these are two of those, actually, in some categories. We'll see the silver winners, a little bit about why they won, and then I'll invite the gold winners onto the stage to receive their award and answer a question or two from me, and I've got a microphone with which to do that. Then the silver winners to receive their award as well, and then the ones to watch. So please do not come to the stage until you are invited to do so, so it doesn't get too crowded up here. As we come to the close of the awards, we'll get the gold winners on stage for a photograph, then the silver winners as well, and then the ones to watch with a final group photograph. And then don't forget there is a reception outside for you to congratulate the winners and ask them more about their very inspiring work. We're also, and this is really important, publishing the judges' reasons in a neat little pamphlet. I don't know if somebody can stand up and wave one of those, but it's incredibly good. Charlotte's got one somewhere. It's really clever. Anyway, copies for you to pick up as you leave, and it's very worth reading. So let's get on to the main business of the award giving. We're going to present the awards in the following order. Here we go. Best for wildlife, best for employment, best for managing success, best for communicating responsible tourism, communicating, best for local economic benefit, to your question earlier on, and an overall winner. So the judges, if we go to the first category, best for wildlife. The judges particularly interested in nominations that focused on improving wildlife conservation and animal welfare in wild or natural settings. The judges recognised the success of their Wildlife Not Entertainers campaign, for the winner. And they've moved from awareness raising and encouraging tourists to make informed choices, to tackling tour operators as well. They now have 200 travel companies taking responsibility by no longer selling elephant entertainment. Would Nick Stewart, who's won the gold, their acting global head of campaigns, come up to the stage to receive the award, please? Nick, can I, are you going? I was just going to ask you, how much progress do you think has been made in this area? Because it actually is more complex, as I understood from judging, than you might imagine.
Yeah, over the recent years, we've made quite a bit of headway with reducing demand from the public. So we've seen quite a lot of attitude change. We've seen a 9% drop in the acceptability of elephant riding amongst the public. We've seen the travel industry really step up to this, with over 200 travel companies now eliminating elephant riding from their itineraries and moving further than that as well. And we've actually started to see a ripple effect from that demand reduction, with attractions like Elephant Camps in Thailand really willing now to talk to us about changing their business model, moving away from things like riding to becoming fully elephant friendly. So it's really exciting.
Okay, and barriers that you're still trying to pull down?
Yeah, I mean, there's still a way to go. You know, elephants is a start. They're obviously, there's 500,000 or more animals in captivity, so we've got other species to address. Yesterday we did launch a new report called Associated with Cruelty, which really looks at the role that travel associations can play in this. And we are really, we have a call to travel associations to join us and set strong guidelines for members, and also to implement those guidelines, because they are a player at the moment that are noticeably absent from the issue. So we'd like to speak to them, and we'd like them to do more and join in solution.
Congratulations, and thank you very much indeed. Please give them a round of applause. So this category combined the conservation of species and animal welfare, and I said that quite a few aspects to that, really. So it was always likely the category would produce two gold awards, right? And it has. So French Ford won gold in the India Responsible Tourism Awards in 2018. The World Awards judges wanted to recognise the significance of this rewilding initiative in India and a conservation strategy more common in Africa. So that's an example of tourism being used to achieve existing conservation objectives. French Ford have asked that Harold Goodwin collect the award on their behalf, and they suffered considerable damage, you'll be aware, as did much of Kerala from flooding, and all their resources have been invested in recovery. So, Harold, why did the judges like French Ford?
I think what's really impressed the judges was the fact that the idea of creating a connection between areas of conserved land, which we see a lot in Africa, we're finally seeing it emerging in India. One of the problems about tourism development around wildlife areas is that it often stops the movement of animals, which means the gene pool becomes smaller and there's no interconnection. So for India, it's a really remarkable step forward. And the fact that tourists are there is helping to stop the poaching and the other problems.
Harold, thank you very much indeed. Right. The volunteers, and some of them, the volunteers there, are very real eco-tourists. They've been instrumental in helping collect the data required to make informed decisions about the effective conservation of endangered and threatened African wildlife species in Botswana, Seychelles, and South Africa. So, would Jane Edge, representing World Animal Protection, come up to the stage to receive the award? Down. But now it looks like things are finally coming around. I know we've got a long, long way to go. And where we'll end up, I don't know. Now, also, the Sri Lanka Wildlife Conservation Society has taken some very innovative initiatives to reduce elephant-human conflict. Solar-powered fencing, growing oranges as a buffer crop and beekeeping, and the 24-passenger eco-friendly bus launched in 2016. And that enables children to get safely to school through an ancient elephant corridor. Right, next category, employment. The judges were looking for businesses with a demonstrated commitment to decent and fair working conditions. And we've been looking for applications that calibrate the remuneration. It's okay to say that you're doing it, but you need to be able to measure it. And against the minimum wage, the national minimum wage is one way of doing it. Intrepid Colombo has done that. In Sri Lanka, the minimum wage for tour leaders is set at 2,500 the local currency per day, but their range is 4,000 to 5,750 per day, plus allowances and an annual bonus. So would Natalie Kidd, Managing Director of Peak DMC Intrepid Group, come up to receive the award, please? So ultimately, presumably, improving pay and conditions does make business sense. Would you experience that?
Absolutely. You know, working in tourism, our people are our greatest assets. You know, we want the best people working for us, both in an office environment, but also in the example of leaders, of course, out on the ground interacting with our travelling customers. And just rewarding them for the wonderful job they do, you know, hopefully we can continue to encourage them and also deliver the best possible experience for our passengers.
Thank you very much indeed. Please congratulate her. Thank you. Now, Mother Ivy's Bay Holiday Park pays substantially more than the government's living wage and an end-of-season bonus to help seasonal workers transition between jobs or benefits. Would Patrick Langmaid, the owner of Mother Ivy's Bay Holiday Park, come to the stage, please, to receive the award? And congratulations.
It's a 1, 2, 3, take my hand and come with me because you look so fine that I really want to make you mine. I say you look so fine that I really want to make you mine.
Now, the UNWTO has just published advice on coping with over-tourism. The judges were looking for examples of destinations which are managing tourism to ensure that they remain good places to live and to visit. Barcelona has developed a wide range of demand and supply side strategies, very impressive actually, and tools to manage tourism better and to ensure that the city remains a very good place to live and to visit too. So the judges recognise that Barcelona has developed and tested a great many methods of managing tourism to ensure that tourism fitted better with the needs of the city. Would Joan Torella and Silva Susana Flores come to the stage to receive Barcelona's award? Are you escaping? I think she's there you go. I was just wondering, what if you were to point to one initiative that was the most effective, what would it be?
Well, by being a city, an urban destination with success means that has some effects over the city. It's important to manage these effects and to involve the local community in this management, and also to consider the visitors as inhabitants, temporary inhabitants in the city, and don't separate among us.
Thank you very much indeed, and congratulations. So that problem is not unique to Barcelona, of course, so it's worth having a look at what they've been doing. Over-tourism isn't just in cities either. We've seen there were protests about the negative impacts on Kumarakom. Effective action has been taken to reduce environmental pollution, which is another problem, and to create economic opportunities for local people. So the village life experiences have been a great hit with tourists. There's now very little opposition there to tourism. Would Mr. Kalakumpali Surendran and Mrs. Rani George come up to the stage to receive Kerala's award? Just wanted to ask one of you before you escape. helping local communities, I think, really at the center of what it is you do. Why was that so important?
We began this initiative around 10 years back, of course, with the support of Mr. Harold Godwin. And we began with 4 destinations, and gradually we have increased it to more 20 destinations. And we have formed different small units of the local community, supplying products to the local hotels and resorts and empowering them economically, socially, and environmentally. And now we are extending it to more local bodies in the form of a people's participatory management.
Thank you so much and good luck. Thank you very much. So the National Trust in Northern Ireland has introduced timed ticketing to cope with this problem. I keep using the wrong microphone. And carefully managed coach arrivals and departures to prevent overcrowding. And visitor satisfaction, as a result, has dramatically improved. The judges were impressed by this. We were. And their plans for further action, definitely one to watch. Now, the penultimate category is communicating responsible tourism. We've said that the tourism industry has a very great opportunity here. The judges were looking for businesses able to demonstrate the way in which they have successfully used their responsible business approach as part of their marketing or campaigns, able to show a degree of success in addressing tourism or tourism-related issues. So, their Namaste Nepal campaign run in response to the 2015 earthquake, Intrepid, has the data to demonstrate the success of the campaign as well in recovering visitor numbers and securing funding to repair the damage caused by the earthquake. Would James Thornton, CEO of Intrepid Group, come to the stage, please, to receive the award? Hello. What have you learned through this initiative, would you say?
I think we've learned that when there's a terrible disaster that happens in the world, it's really important to go beyond traditional philanthropy. And the country of Nepal would face an even worse disaster if we didn't get passengers travelling back to the country. And so we took the responsibility to donate our profits for the 15-16 trekking season. And as a result, we got more passengers travelling back to the country of Nepal than prior to the devastating earthquake. So we were able to make a material difference to the local people so they wouldn't lose their number one form of income.
Thank you very much indeed, and congratulations. Yeah. Right, so where are we? Judges also looking for an example of a business or destination using responsible tourism as a major part of their marketing. TUI UK and Ireland have given the same marketing weight to TUI's Better Holidays, Better World as they have to their other key messages. They have embedded better business storytelling, which we were hearing about, and experiences into the core of the brand. And by doing so, they put responsible tourism at the very heart of their offer. So would Helen Karen, please, from the Group Purchasing Director at TUI Group, come up to receive the award, along with Krista Busnea and Ian Corbett, if they're all here. Hey,
There's been so many things that's held us down.
Hi there, who wants to... Hi again. So this is something that you've been sort of able to roll out across the group, a way of thinking, Helen?
So this campaign was in the UK, and it was an opportunity for us to promote tourism as a force for good to all of our consumers. So we touched over 4.5 million customers as part of this campaign. And I think what was interesting was it was a time when we were rebranding from Thompson to TUI. So it was a kind of huge change for the business. But absolutely responsible tourism was at the heart of that communication strategy. And we're also now going to use this as a framework for the way that we communicate responsible tourism going forward. So it was a big success for us.
Helen, congratulations and thank you so much. So Rethink Orphanages, we've talked about this a bit earlier today. It's an Australian network which has used clear and consistent evidence-based, targeted and customised messaging to identify orphanage trafficking as a form of modern slavery, setting a global precedent. Would Lee Matthews, one of the founders of Rethink Orphanages, come up to the stage, please, to receive the award? Congratulations. So, final category, best for local economic benefit. The judges there, really, we were looking for examples which could inspire and educate others, including consumers, about just what can be achieved and to challenge other businesses to do it as well or even better. There were some really great initiatives in this category, but there is, as we know, much more that can be done too. One Seed Expeditions invests in local suppliers of goods and services to enable it to purchase locally. 79% of sales revenue is spent on local suppliers, a further 10% invested through microfinance organizations. 90% of their investments support women-owned businesses. So it's happening. Would Kate Mason, head of marketing at One Seed Expeditions, come up, please, to receive the award? Like a dragon, wanna retire, man, I'm too hot. Bitch, say my name, you know who I am, I'm too hot. And my band bought that money, break it down. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Girls hit you, hallelujah. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Many congratulations. Why, a lot of it makes sense to me, the local sourcing and stuff. Why the microfinance part of this?
Yeah, that's actually how we were founded about 8 years ago, and that's in the name One Seed for seed funding. Our founder was working and living in Nepal and working as a Kiva fellow and saw how much microfinance really helped people in local communities. So that's actually how we were founded, was to support women in microfinance initiatives through travel, and we've just grown every year, and the more we grow, the more women we can support through it. So
many congratulations, great work. Thank you. So they're widely recognized for their pioneering work in making a success of community-owned lodges, taking them effectively to market, upskilling the communities around them, which own the lodges, and training and employing community members as well. So the judges for this winner recognized in particular the micro enterprises which have been financed and mentored. Sacred Baleni Salt, Sacred Lake Funduzi, and the Rabola Art Route, and with local weaving, furniture, craft, and toiletries. Would Glyn O'Leary, CEO of Transfrontier Parks Destinations, please come up to collect the award? Congratulations to him. Good. So, Coconut Lagoon has consistently worked to create shared value for the local community, creating opportunities for local people, which go beyond employment, actually, and sourcing of local produce. They work to create shared value. For example, SMT Shanta, which is the owner of a small tea shop in the village, provides chai from a copper samovar on the old plantation tea canoe, even every afternoon. Would Michael Dominic, director of CGH Earth Hotels, please come up to the stage to receive the award? Congratulations to you. Many congratulations to you. Madi Artava is a lodge and hub for the promotion and development of local ethnic art and craft of the Venda, Songa, and Lobewa people. Their work is now being extended to the Makuleki people, and they are opening a craft arts centre at Victoria Yards in Johannesburg. Would Jane Edge, representing Wildlife Act, come to the stage, please, to receive the award? Now, in the Pyrenees of Catalonia, a group of rural accommodation providers and other small tourist businesses have come together to create and bring to market a walking or cycling journey that links several Casa Rurals in seven different rural settlements along historical pastoral pathways. It's growing organically and deserves to be replicated. This UK Darwin-funded initiative has worked with 14 small enterprises, trained over 300 local people in basket weaving, guiding, carving, horticulture, and apiculture. In the final phase of the project, there should be evidence of the impact of the intervention on the livelihoods of the beneficiaries, and the judges look forward to seeing it. Now, I told you that there would be one final award, and this overall award for 2018 is from the 8 gold winners running this year. So, would all the gold winners join us on the stage now for a group photograph? I'll keep going while you do that. If you could come to the stage, the gold winners. And then I will tell you who it is. I'll carry on introducing it. So since 2012, over-tourism has become a massive, major challenge in some communities, urban and rural destinations alike, actually. Well, more often addressed in the mainstream media. We've heard that recently. Certainly I've heard it in the media and on social media in the travel trade. I don't want to give the game away before the big photograph. I think I have given the game away already. So, I was talking about over-tourism, and I've given the game away. Barcelona recognized this challenge earlier than most and clearly separated the functions of promotion, management shifting,
And the judges chose Barcelona, therefore, for as the winner of this award. It's a very important issue, as we know. So, Sylvia, Susana Flores, joining Joan Torella on the stage to collect the award. Hi. Thank you. So, would one of you like to say a few words about this award?
I want to thank Harold.
Yeah.
Because he's really involved with the work that we are developing in Barcelona. He's really concerned about what we're doing. And it's important for us to have that kind of voices to share our work. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. It's very innovative. Did it take a lot of thinking and creativity to do what you've done?
Yes, it is actually. We've been talking about that in several different forums here in the world travel market. Tourism, as we mentioned already, is a part of the city, and it's really important for us to manage it.
Thank you very much indeed. Now, I'd like all of the gold winners now on the stage, because I think we were missing some there, so for a group photograph. And when we're done with this, I'd like the silver winners, please, to come up as well. Are we photographing them together or separately from gold? Together, silver and gold together, please. So the silver winners up, please. Thank you. Silver and gold on the stage together, please. Silver and gold together, please. So as you're doing that, I'm just going to remind everybody that it's impossible to win if you don't apply, right? So please do, if you haven't applied this year, please think about applying for awards next year. We've came across during our judging process quite a few ones to watch, and I'm just going to quickly run through those when we're done with this photograph. Okay, I think we're nearly done here. I just want to go through these. Harold, shall I carry on with the ones to watch? Yes.
We want the photograph.
Yes, we want the ones to watch photograph, but I'm just going to quickly run through who they are. Now, this is testing my Spanish. Asociación Marqués de Pastor, Cinque, Catalonia, Spain, for their partnership to extended length of stay and create a trail to benefit SMEs. So would Maria Font please join the group on stage? Maria Font with us? Well done. IIED's Darwin Initiative funded work at Bwindi in Uganda, and it shows great promise. The judge is looking forward to seeing the results. So would Peter Nizet join the group also on stage, please? National Trust Northern Ireland, brilliant initiative here, beginning a major program of work to make tourism sustainable at the Giant's Causeway. Esther Dobbin, please, joining the group on stage, also at Carrick already. And Sri Lanka Wildlife Conservation Society for their work to reduce human-animal conflict. These are all the ones to watch, and we think that they'll pop up again in the years to come. I wanted to say to you that the 2019 World Travel Awards will be launched on the 19th of March. So I just wanted to thank all of you for your attention this morning. This is a very, very exciting area for me and for indeed everybody else to watch. Plenty of initiative, creativity going on. This is far less straightforward than perhaps we at first thought. Thank you for your attention and have a nice drink that way. Thank you.